Okay, so let's see if we can take the building blocks regarding Tashbisu that we have laid out and bring them together and hopefully get some meaningful insights and observations from some of the great Gedolim of the past few hundred years and further. That we had just a recap. So one of the major points we were trying to understand is the nature of the mitzvah of Tashbisu and whether really it exists as an independent affirmative concept. And, ooh, we got a winner on this one. Okay, that's very good. All right, we'll come back to that in a second. But, just on a chat point. So we have a, we've been talking about the mitzvah of Tashbisu, and the question which we've centered around the discussion in the Chassidus that many others get involved with, really both before and after, whether Tashbisu has an independent existence as an affirmative mitzvah, something the Torah specifically wants us to do, or is it just a way of saying that we should not have chametz, bayirah, bayimaseh, and also, if you do have it, destroy it. And we saw that various other issues seem to interlock with that. That's Reb Chaim Brisker bringing up the point of the question of whether chametz is a lav hanitak la'aseh or not, whether tashbisu is lav hanitak la'aseh or not, and the machlokes between the Rebbe Yehuda and Chachamim, whether tashbisu requires a specific act of sreifa or whether we say hashbasasa b'chol davar, any kind of elimination of the chametz is equally effective. So to try to work with some of those points, so as far as Mechatzinah's central question, so there are those who came at it from different directions. And for example, Rav Asher Weisschlit in his sefer, so he argues that the Menchas Chinuch is actually not framing the question correctly, and that he would frame the question differently, because he assumes that it doesn't make sense to say that the Torah gives us a mitzvah of Tashbisu in that language, which conveys something very active, but it's just a way of saying don't have chametz. And we mentioned in the past the commonality between the word Tashbisu and the word Shabbos. So yes, it's true they have that linguistic commonality. And when it comes to Shabbos, we understand that we're not expected to intentionally be doing malacha up until the last second so that we can actively destroy our work and then start being in a state of rest. So couldn't it be similar that just like when Shabbos starts, if we happen not to be doing malacha, we're fine. So too, when Pesach starts, if we happen not to have any chametz, we're equally fine. There's no requirement to do anything more than that. So Rav Asher assumes that no, it's not a good comparison because the formulation of the word Tashbisu, Hashbasa, is different than Hashisa. And yes, they're all coming from the same root, but Shabbos is a passive state. And Hashbasa is to put something into a passive state. So therefore, the Torah is clearly, he feels, commanding us to do something. And that simply being without chametz wouldn't qualify. But the question that there is to ask is, what is the nature of that act of mitzvah? So here he notes that some of the sources you might think that are in line with a Menchas Chinuch are not necessarily saying the same thing. Among them, the Reb Chaim that we mentioned, where Reb Chaim focuses on the Lav Hanitak La'aseh question and also the position that it requires Dafka Sreifa. And it sounds like that's all lining up with the idea that it's specifically a affirmative act as opposed to just being a passive state. But it's not necessarily coming at it the same way as in the Chassidus, as the others point out also. But he also calls attention to the Ramban and 10 points to Akiva Levi who recognized the quote. managed to put up here in the chat. This quote is from the Ramban that you saw already in the context of Bittul. So there, the Ramban discusses Tosfos's question on Rashi. Rashi said that Tashbisu is Bittul. And Tosfos says, how could it be Tashbisu, the mitzvah is specifically in the middle of the day of Pesach? And by that point already, you can no longer do Bittul. So how could Bittul and Tashbisu be the same thing? So the language they're unbound in response to that here, you should see in the chat, ain't a question, not a question. Savaru. So the Torah tells us to get rid of the Chameis. How could it be telling us to do that at that point after Chatzos? And once you hit that minute, you're already in violation. So it's already a question. That whatever the Torah is telling you to do it at that point, it's already too late. Ella shehe mivuar o mivutal b'chatzos kamar achman. Rather, what the Torah is instructing by pinning Tashbisu at that moment is that at that point, the chametz should be destroyed or batal. So, one could assume, or one could interpret that Ramban as aligning with one side in the Minchas Chinuch. Like that all it means is don't have chametz. It's not requiring you to do anything. And as long as that moment hits and you are a chametzel, you have no chametz, look that one up, so then you are in fulfillment. It's just a passive state, like Shabbos, of not having chametz. One could think that that's what the Ramban is saying. But recall that I just said a minute ago that Rav Asher thought that was not even a viable possibility, that Tashbisu, by its very nature, must be something more active than that, and that that's not a possibility. So could you read this Ramban any other way? Is it possible the Ramban is not coming to tell you just that it is a passive state of not having chametz? All right, these words, is there any other reading to them? Ela shehe mevuar umevutal bichatzos kama rachmana. So the way Rav Asher formulates it, this is, clearly the Torah wants you to do something. But still, there's room to question how to relate to that something. Is that something a mitzvah, to use maybe overly brisker terminology, is it a mitzvah on the gavra that the Torah wants you to be involved in some kind of activity at that time? Or is it about bringing about a reality? Is it a result-based mitzvah? That at that time, you should be ensuring that you are chametzless. So either way, it's about doing something. But the question is it that we want you to be doing a specific action? Like, for example, to line it up with Reb Chaim now, is it that, like Rabbi Yehuda, we want you to be engaged in sreifa at that moment? Or no, hashpesasu b'chol davar, because it doesn't matter how you do it. It's about getting it done, like the mysterious hitman who you hire without using too explicit language so you'll have plausible deniability. Just, you know, get it done. Whatever. I don't care how you do it. I just want to know it's done. So his understanding is that what the Ramban is saying here is not that shiehe mavur mavutl v'chatzos doesn't mean that as long as you don't have chametz, then you're fine. And if you never had chametz, if you've been going keto all year, wonderful. He doesn't mean that. What he means is that there is a mitzvah to do, Erev Pesach, an active mitzvah. But the nature of that mitzvah is just to erase your chametz. So, by its nature, the process must mean that it's a process that ends at that time. And the only way to interpret the Chumash, what the Ramban is saying, is that when the Torah is pinning Tashbisu to a certain moment, it doesn't mean, okay, now at that moment, start destroying it. It means finish having destroyed it by then. So saying that she'ehei mavur mavutol doesn't mean that, I mean, if you ever had it in the first place, even better. No, you have to have it in order to do that. But in order to do that, the goal is to get rid of your chametz by this time. So what the words in the Chumash mean by pinning tashbis to that time is means be completed with your process at that time. Because it's a result-based mitzvah that applies on Erev Pesach, rather than a obligation on the gavra. Follow? Make sense? So that language is not a passive state, the Ramban is saying. He's saying that it tells you what kind of an action you're supposed to be doing, an action that is focused on getting rid of chametz rather than on the activity per se, but on the result. And that's what Reb Chaim is getting at also, that according to Reb Yehuda, it's about the sreifa. And according to Chachamim, it doesn't matter how you do it. It's just about getting there without chametz. But both possibilities require something to happen on Erev Pesach. Now, if you didn't have any chametz, would that mean you should go out and buy chametz? Still, probably not. Although he does note that the Chazon Ish in his Sefer on Demai says it's Amidas Chasidus to obtain some chametz to destroy in Erev Pesach. But without that, you could just say, okay, if you happen not to have chametz, so then you don't have a chiyuv tashbisu on you. But still, what tashbisu would mean is to actively destroy chametz or bring about its destruction. And he notes that this is also a machlokes, which many others bring in this context as well, that the Magen Avraham says that a fulfillment that you could have of Tashbisu on Yom Tov, you could give the chametz to a non-Jew and have him destroy it. And Rebbe Akiva Eiger asks, how could that be? There's no shlichus for an akum, and you're losing the mitzvah. Rav Nachum Zamba has a piece about this in the Sefer Zayav Ram. So, as Rav Asher notes, he says that seems to be the machlokes, that they both agree Tashbisu is something active, but that what the Magen Avraham is talking about is all we care about is that you bring about the erasing of the chametz. So you don't need halachic shlichus to that. While Rav Akiva Eiger is wondering, how could that work? If you don't have shlichus, you're losing the mitzvah. So the question is, do you need shlichus for the mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah that's about what you're doing? Or is it a mitzvah that's really not even dependent on your behavior at all? It's about arranging for its disappearance. And as long as you're arranging for its disappearance, then that is what the mitzvah is asking of you. So that kind of gives us an expanded list of possibilities. If you don't want to write the Minchas Chinuch Tzad off the table completely, but we could just expand the list and say that Tashbisu is either about not having chametz in the first place, or about making sure that your chametz disappears, or a third possibility about actively engaging in burning chametz. But whether you call it two possibilities or three possibilities. So we have the nafkaminas, some of them that we've mentioned already, some of them that the Minchas Chinuch listed. And one of the most bizarre nafkaminas, I remember it was Ari who called this one last week, and what was the most maybe unusual of the nafkaminas? Recall what I'm thinking about? Yeah, what is
eating
it?
the chametz on Pesach.
What was it?
That kind of eating chametz on Pesach, that kind of was the fulfillment of Hashbitah.
Right, we called it, I think, the Levi Yitzchak Berdichev approach. I think that when they're up there in Shemayim trying to prosecute you on eating chametz, so your very gracious defense lawyer will say, look, 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 at least he was fulfilling Tashbisu. Mika Amchi Yisrael, at least they do Tashbisu. You should have respect for that. So what about that question, doing Tashbisu through eating chametz? And even through eating chametz on Pesach, is there any sad to that? So there is a more extensive discussion about this in the Achronim. There's a tshuva about this. The brother likes pointing out it's one of the nicest names for a tshuva sefer. Shailston Tshuva's Tshuva Me'ava, who was a Talmud of the Noda of Yehuda, Blazer Fleckles. So he has a tshuva that he assumes, I guess it's also... It's very appropriate for the name, I guess. Aptly, the Tshuva's Tshuva Me'ava has a Tshuva that he's sure that eating chametz on Pesach is a fulfillment, at least, of Tashbisu. And others say that's very hard to believe. Among them, Tam HaMelech, it's quoted by the Bikur Yaakov and a few others. Maybe you're raising your hand? Yeah.
Wouldn't whether or not it like eating chametz be tashbisu really more be dependent on whether the destruction of the chametz is the end goal or how you destroy the chametz is the end goal? Like, I don't know if I'm being so clear right now, but if the point is to destroy, if the point is for the chametz to be destroyed, then maybe eating it could fulfill Tashbisu, but if how the chametz is destroyed is part of the mitzvah, then eating it might not.
Well, the Mechas Chinuch frames it as being related to this question. Right? And these farim actually discussed it before the Mechas Chinuch. But the Mechas Chinuch assumes that it does connect to that question, that if it's about just disappearing the chametz, so, okay, at least he disappeared the chametz. But if it's some positive mitzvah, then he would think it should be a mitzvah habav yaver. So, Sfarim that spoke about it before or around the same time, they have a slightly different angle on it. That here the Tshuv Me'ava is saying that he thinks it is a kiyama mitzvah. And others saying, how could it be? First of all, without getting into generalities yet, but the very language of the pasuk, Tashbisu chametz, like he called ochel sar v'nichrusa, and he says, get rid of your chametz because whoever destroys the chametz is chayiv kares. How could it be that the message is that you should eat the chametz in order to get rid of it? And that does seem to be a pella. Rabbi Kiva Eger, in his Drush v'Chiddush, so he thinks that this is totally on a machlokas later on. I didn't give you this to look at, but you can take a look. We should look at it tomorrow on Daf Chav Ches. There is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. That according to Rabbi Shimon, on Erev Pesach, it's when you have the mitzvah of Tashbisu, it's still mutter to eat chametz. So if that's the case, so then you see that Tashbisu does coexist at least at some point with a heter to eat chametz. So if you were to eat chametz on Erev Pesach, according to that view, you would fulfill Tashbisu, presumably. So if there's already a concept of Tashbisu being fulfilled through Achila, so then, once that door is opened, it could be that even on Pesach itself, you fulfill Tashbisu through Achila. Although, as Rabbi Kiva Eger goes on to note himself, he says, okay, that could be, as far as the Gedarim of Tashbisu, but then you still may run up to at least Mitzvah Bav Yavera. It would seem like there is a pretty big Avera involved in it. And there's a discussion in this in the Sefer Cheshbonos Shel Mitzvah. It was written by the Adaris. The Adaris was a very big gaon who was the first father-in-law of Rav Kook. He was the father of Rav Kook's first wife. And he was a very big Talmid Chacham. Shechter gave a shiur about him a few months ago. I think over the summer he was giving shiurim about various rabbinic figures. He spoke about the Adaris, if I'm not mistaken, about how he's not so well-known. He should be well-known. So the Adaris was the Rashi Tevis, the Leo Dov, the Rabbinowitz Tumim. And Shechter mentioned that lecture also about how he wrote many, many Sfarim that he didn't have the funds to publish when he was alive, and they were published later. So he has a discussion about this. I don't know if he was probably writing about the same time the Menachas Chinuch lived in the 1800s. He may have written this before the Menachas Chinuch. I don't think he quotes the Menachas Chinuch, but he quotes a lot of others. So he talks about this question, and he says it really is a Pella. Right, to say that this is even something you could think about, because it would seem to be a pretty glaring mitzvah habavi avera. But even, he says, there is a view in some of the Rishonim that mitzvah habavi avera doesn't apply to everything. It applies only to certain mitzvahs. And so, for example, we know it applies to lulav, the famous sugi, lulav hagazel. And we know it applies to karbanos. So some of the Rishonim say there's what in common between the two, that it's not that there's an automatic exclusion for any mitzvah havavi aveira, but a mitzvah that's specifically about ritzui. And so synergy, this is actually derived from the Haftorah of this past Shabbos. Gemara quotes Pesukim from this past week's Haftorah. That, but when a karbanos, or you're supposed to appease God, you're supposed to make God happy with your karbanos, and to do so through an avera, that's just too much of a contradiction. So even though you could say that by all mitzvahs, but God wants you to do mitzvahs, so how could you do that through an avera? Yeah, it's true, but especially if the mitzvah by its very nature is about appeasing God even more than a stam mitzvah, that's where you have a psula mitzvah by the avera. So the Ritva and Sukkah understands that that's true also by Lulav. It has the same message. But Lulav and Esrog are also about something in that spirit, and therefore they are subject to the disqualification of mitzvah of Avi Aveir. So yeah, Darius writes, okay, so maybe not by all mitzvahs, but you would think that that's especially still true by Tashbizu, because this is like a personal ritzui. Okay, so if it's there to fix Bayira, Bayimat, it's there to save me from eating chametz. Okay, so I am at risk of being in trouble for Bayira, Bayimat, especially if it's Pesach already. And so I want to clean it up. And I'll clean it up by doing Tashbisu through eating it. So that's a personal ritzui, right? I'm trying to fix my own mistakes. All the more so, there should be a psul of mitzvah habavi aveira. So it's very hard to understand. So he suggests, and you can't go too far with this, but just he's basically explaining how it could exist at all as a concept, that this position, you have to assume mitzvah strichos kavana, that in order to fulfill a mitzvah of Tashbisu, you would have to be intending for that purpose. And that even through eating the chametz, your intention is not to enjoy this chametz, that's so gishmak, but because you are looking to fulfill Tashbisu through eating it. And that, perhaps in doing so, it wouldn't even be considered a maisa achila. It would be considered a maitza hashbasa. Sometimes imagine, like, you know, it's a question in brachos. Let's say you're in the car and you have some drink that's uncovered and you're afraid to leave it uncovered because when you're going to turn, it's going to spill over everything. So sometimes you want to drink just to make it disappear. And you're not interested. It's cold, flat, warm, whatever it is. Not an appealing drink anymore. Cold coffee, warm soda, whatever it is, flat. And if it's just the only reason you're drinking it is because you don't want it to make a mess, so you just want to make it disappear, and there's no other way to do that. So if your kavana is totally for the hashpasa, it's not a mitzvah at all, so that's where the conversation could come in. But it's certainly not a lemaisa etza. And he concludes, not a lemaisa etza for another reason, because, and this is something we're going to now find a little further, that the mitzvah, tashbisu, as a mitzvah, is really only on Erev Pesach. So, what's the story with that? So, let's go back now to the whole question of La Panita Klase. And we saw that we would have basis to assume that Ba'yira and Ba'yimatze are La Panita Klase, or one or both of them together is La Panita Klase, because Tashbisu comes to clean it up. And indeed, the Gemara on Daf Tzadi Hei seems to say that. So the question was the Rambam. Right? That the Rambam writes that you could be Chayiv Malkus for Ba'yira Ba'yimotze. Apparently, it's not a Lav Hanita Klase. Now, most cases, you won't be Chayiv Malkus, he writes, because it'll usually be a Lav She'en Bo Maisa, usually going to happen in a passive way. You just didn't get rid of your chametz. You're not actually doing anything. But theoretically, if you chose to bake some chametz or purchase some chametz in Pesach, you would be Chayiv Malkus. It wouldn't be a Lav Hanita Klase. So, why not? It's a question, why not conceptually? And also, what about the Gemara? So the Gemara, the Acharonim say the Rambam must not paskin like and not have that gears from that Gemara. So textually, we'll have to explain one way or another, the Rambam's not dealing with that Gemara. So what about the logic of it? Why isn't it the case that Tashbisu comes to clean up Ba'yira Ba'yimatze? So you have such a structure. So if you have a los assay and you have an assay that cleans it up, why isn't that a Lav Hanita Klase? So there's a discussion about this in the literally awesome Sefer Beis Yishai. I don't know how many of you are familiar. It should be well, the Shlomo Fischer Shlitz is a tremendous gaon who lives in Harnof, she's in Itri. And he has a few svarim by the title Beis Yishai, and more recently he has Drashos. But years ago he published all of his top shiurim, I guess, in the Sefer Beis Yishai. I used to go hear him. He give a shiur in his house in Harnof. I was zoch a few times to hear him in his house. He has a tremendous mastery of the Torah literature and its underpinnings. So, in the Sefer Beis Yishai, he has many of these written in somewhat of a difficult style, a little bit sometimes work through. But in the Beis Yishai, he discusses this, and he says that he thinks the reason the Rambam holds that Islav Hanita Klase is not applicable here is because the Rambam holds that Tashbisu does not apply on Pesach. Right, Tashbisu applies Erev Pesach. That's what our Gemara and stuff, Hayim and Aleph, is telling us. So on Erev Pesach, you have Tashbisu. And on Pesach itself, you have Ba'yira, Ba'yimatze. They don't happen at the same time. So if you have your own chametz on Pesach, you got to get rid of it, because otherwise you're in violation of Ba'yira, Ba'yimatze. It's enough to tell you got to get rid of it. But you're not accomplishing any mitzvah of Tashbisu. That was Erev Pesach. Now he says, why is that the case? Now, why is that mitzvah only on Erev Pesach? So this ties into what we were talking about previously. What is Tashbisu, practically speaking? Now we saw this was a Machlokas HaRishonim. So, according to the Rambam, what is Tashbisa, primarily? It was Bittul. Is that actually what you wanted to say? Right, Tashbisu is Bittul. And we know that Bittul doesn't work after the Zman of the Isser. So, therefore, if Tashbisu is Bittul, and Bittul doesn't work after Chametz is Isser, so therefore Tashbisu must be limited to Erev Pesach. And on Pesach itself, you just have Yisr Ba'ira Ba'imateh, but you don't have any positive mitzvah that's connected to that. So therefore, it's not Nitak Lasei according to the Rambam. Then he says, wait a minute, okay, so that could work for the Rambam. But what about Rashi? Well, according to Rashi, it is a lav hanita klase. That emerges from that Gemara and Daf Tzadihei. So Rashi, for sure, more explicitly than the Rambam, Rashi holds that Tashbisu is Bittul. So if Tashbisu is Bittul, and you can't do Bittul on Pesach, and if you can't do it on Pesach, it shouldn't be called Nita Klase. So then, why does Rashi call it a Nita Klase? We just said the Rambam can't for that reason, so what about Rashi? Everyone follow that? There was a few steps in that question. Right, that if, Tashi, yeah, Ari?
Do you clarify, explain again, what we're saying a lot of the Nita Klase, does that mean you're in the depths of the Isser, and then you need an active performance to take you out of it, or you would be susceptible to a violation and there's an act of performance that would take you out of the grips of the low factor?
Okay, so that's an interesting question. We say grips, that's quite dramatic. Saying that if the assay could save you preemptively from the low assay, is that called Nitakla assay? So that itself is a little bit of a question, as we'll come back to. It is a little bit of an unclear area because there's a concept of a lav she kidmu assay, that if the Torah presents the lav after the assay, then does that mean it can't be called a lav hanitak lasei because the order is wrong? Or is there still a possibility that if it preemptively stops the lav, maybe that should also have the same structure? And then maybe it could still come in afterwards. So just to make sure the question is clear. So the assumption is that for it to be called a lav hanitak lasei, Tashbisu has to be available as a remedy. So it's got to be available the same time. So the Rambam thinks it's not available because the whole mitzvah as a positive value is Erev Pesach. And we know that because he says that Tashbisu is Bittul, and Bittul can only be done before the time of the Isser. So Tashbisu is not applicable on Pesach itself. So it's not there at the same time as Ba'yirah Ba'yimatzeh. It's not a cleanup service. So the question that is, why is the same not true for Rashi? Because Rashi also says that Tashbisu is Bittul. So what he suggests is as follows. If you recall, we spoke about the whole question of whether Bittul applies to Chametz that is Yadua. Do we say that Bittul only works for Chametz you don't know about? Or can it even work for Chametz you know about? And one Gersa in the Rambam, and the other is shown in the Kolbo, writes that it does not work for Chametz you know about. And the question was, well, but there are Gemaras that talk about remembering that you have Chametz at home, or you're on the way to Shechta Korban Pesach, or you're in the Shir, and you remember that you have Chametz, and still Bittul does work. So how does that play out? So many explain that it's all one idea, that Bittul works as long as it's not being contradicted. So if you have chametz that you know about and you're choosing not to do anything about it, that's not called a bittul. But if it's chametz you know about, but there's a good reason why you're not doing anything about it, you're in the middle of shiur, or you're somewhere else physically, or it's not accessible, then bittul could work for that. It's all a question of whether you contradict your bittul at all. It's not really about yadua or not yadua, it's about whether your bittul is contradicted by anything. So with that understanding, what is tashbisu? The tashbisu, according to the Rambam and Rashi, really, is the mitzvah on Erev Shabbos, Erev Pesach, or called the Shabbos, on Erev Pesach, to disassociate from your chametz. And that disassociation could be mental, could be bittul, but it doesn't just mean for now, it means for the purposes of Pesach. So, for sure, if one were to say, okay, right now on Erev Pesach, right now I'm saying bittul, but I'm looking forward on the first day of Chol HaMoed to that Geshmaka bakery I'm going to go to, that wouldn't be bittul. The whole point of bittul is that, yes, the mitzvah is on Erev Pesach, but it is about Pesach. It's about your decision at that point to not engage with chametz at all over the upcoming days of Pesach. So yes, the mitzvah takes place on Erev Pesach, and it takes the form of bittul, according to Rashi and the Rambam. But it's about the upcoming Pesach. So if one were to engage with chametz on Pesach, that would retroactively undermine his bittul. And the tashbisu that was activated on Erev Pesach would be undermined. So, to that extent, yes, the mitzvah relies on bittul, which can only happen on Erev Pesach, but it's still in play all of Pesach. So if you were to find chametz on Pesach and leave it there, that would retroactively negate your Erev Pesach tashbisu. But if you take action to keep your tashbisu effective, so then it still sticks. So that action is all a consequence of your decision Erev Pesach. So the mitzvah on Erev Pesach was to make that mental commitment. And your responsibility through Pesach is to uphold it and not contradict it. So in that sense, Rashi could say it is a nitak lase, even though it essentially happened on Erev Pesach when bittul was effective. But its impact is still there throughout all of Pesach. And as long as you don't undo it, it will cancel out your bayura bayimat. But if you undermine it by holding on to the chametz that you find on Pesach, then you're left with the avera of bayura bayimat. It's a pretty fascinating idea. Daniel?
Do we ever have a case other than this, where we would say that a lav shenitak la'aseh, with regards to that, the aseh could be something that already started taking place?
Yes, because he says this could be, and it gets a little complicated why I wasn't necessarily saying beforehand, but I can give it to you to read inside. But he says even the Rambam would agree with a different example, that the Torah says if somebody is ma'anis, a woman, so he has to marry her. And assuming she wants to stay with him, big if, but assuming she wants to stay with him, he has to keep her his entire life, if she wants to stay with him. So what if he divorces her? That's also to do. He's got to stay married to her. So, does he get Malkus for divorcing her? No, because it's Nitak La'aseh, because he can remarry her. The whole back and forth, as you are Malkus, be familiar with this whole back and forth. So, that's saying that the remarriage is the assay that corrects his violation of divorcing. But it's all a mitzvah that came before. The Torah doesn't say, remarry her if you divorce her. The Torah says, marry her forever. That's the original action. Marrying before, it happened before you divorced her. And by divorcing her, he messed up his mitzvah of marrying her forever. So he has to fix the mitzvah he messed up. So that's still called a nitak la'aseh, even though it's just restoring the mitzvah from before. And that even the Rambam would agree with. He says that could be the model here, that the mitzvah was tashbisu, erev Pesach. And by deciding to hold on to chametz on Pesach, you're messing up your old mitzvah from erev Pesach. So now Rashi will say restoring that mitzvah is still called the lav nitak la'aseh. A fascinating idea. Everyone follow? So now he goes on to say that there's another question you could ask on Rashi. The one source I gave you to look at today is Rashi on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, that about that machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, does chametz require sreifa, or could it be any manner? So Rashi says, Tosfos disagrees, but Rashi says that Rabbi Yehuda's position that it requires davka sreifa, that's only up until the time of the Isser on Erev Pesach. After that, tashbis also b'chol dav. Then you could destroy it in any way. So one could ask on that Rashi, but it's all one pasuk. It's all coming from one word, from tashbisu. So how are we deciding that it takes two different forms? That up until the Zman Isser, it has to be Sreifa. And after that, it could be anything else. How could the same mitzvah morph in the middle without different language? So he explains along these lines that the mitzvah is, on Erev Pesach, to make a decision that you are separating from Chametz absolutely, in anticipation of the Pesach festival. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it requires an even more absolute declaration. That's the most aggressive action you can take against chametz. So people burn things when they want to say they really want nothing to do with it. You burn books, you burn whatever. You burn things, you burn your draft cards, you burn as a expression of protest. You're saying, this is my statement of complete disconnection. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that that's what it means, that you have to disconnect it from it completely. And that applies when the mitzvah is. And according to the Rambam and Rashi, the mitzvah is at that time of Bittul, Erev Pesach. But on Pesach itself, you could undermine it, because no matter how dramatic a statement you made, if you say, okay, but come Pesach time, come Chol HaMoed, I'm looking forward to baking some wonderful rolls and great bagels, so then that's all going to show that your Erev Pesach was just a show. It wasn't meaningful. So in order not to contradict what you did on Erev Pesach, you can't hold on to any chametz on Pesach. But that's taking a different form, because the action was Erev Pesach. It's just that it can't be undone by anything you do later. So if we're just trying not to undo it, so then, yeah, it doesn't require sreifa. Anything that will make sure you don't have chametz, touch pesach, or b'chol dav, we don't care how. All we care about then is that you're not contradicting your Erev Pesach declaration. But the Erev Pesach declaration, that's when it's active. And that's when you have this machlokes, and Rabbi Yehuda says, it's got to be Sreifa, and others will say it could be anything, and that you could all plug in, like Ravasha said, okay, those are two tzadim in what Tashbisu is. Is it that you should be doing something active, or is it that you should be disappearing the chametz. Okay, so that's a machlokas about Erev Pesach. But on Pesach itself, your mission is to observe Vayira Vayimatzeh and not to contradict Tashbisu. So Tashbisu takes the form of just avoiding contradiction on Pesach, and that we don't care how you do it, just make sure not to have the chametz. Yeah, Daniel?
But what's the source for that? Who ever says that Tashbisu extends onto Pesach?
The idea that Tashbisu means a statement regarding Pesach itself, which does flow from the pasuk, right? Tashbisu ki kolocho chametz nechusa, right? That do Tashbisu now because of the impending yontif when chametz will be aser b'achila with a capital Aleph. And therefore, it must mean not just put on a show right now that's gonna, you're gonna rip off the mask as soon as nobody's watching. It must mean you make a big statement now that's gotta also be upheld throughout the yontif. So the mitzvah takes place actively on that day, on Erev Pesach, but it's gonna be a joke if it's gonna be contradicted later. So the mitzvah has an active and passive form. Means make a statement, if it's still all one thing, make a statement that you mean. So,
but we have, I mean, you could say that about anything then. So you would say that you're not fulfilling kibud av va'em if you were once respectful. I guess it's a bad example.
Well, it may not be such a bad example. I mean, you're right that every mitzvah probably doesn't necessarily take the same form, but kibud av va'em could be a better example than you might think, because there, it is also about actions expressing a certain attitude. So I think everyone's parents would be the first to acknowledge that if you did the outward expressions of kibud av va'em that the Gemara talks about, but you otherwise conveyed tremendous disrespect, that indeed that would undermine the mitzvah. And actually, Gemara even says that
yeah,
a bit too.
I meant it was a bad example for me,
what?
For my side of it.
Okay, but it might be a better example than you think, right? They're saying maybe there are such things. The average mitzvah you pick out of a hat wouldn't be such a great example, but kibud av va'em dafka may have.
Just because you don't do it again later.
But it's not about not doing it again. It's about showing that here the mitzvah is clearly, it's not about like, okay, if you ate a cheeseburger today, so then it means the fact that you abstained last week is meaningless? No, because last week, okay, you didn't eat the cheeseburger and today you did. But Tashbisu is one time a year specifically addressing how this next week is going to play out. So then we have to see what happens during that week. Now that's an unusual kind of structure. Kibud av va'em also, you wouldn't say, okay, if you were respectful last month but disrespectful today, then the last month doesn't count. That's not what we mean necessarily. We mean that if somebody is bringing his parents a glass of water, but he's also scowling at them at the same time, which the Gemara actually gives that example, right, that if he's displaying disdain while he's doing it, then that's not going to be the mitzvah. So for that extent, maybe a pretty good example. So there is a similar position to an earlier generation, since we were quoting Shlomo Fisher, but before him, there is a reasonably similar position with different points by Rabbi Yitzchak Glaser, also known as the Bitzel of Paterberger, was one of the top students of Bishal Salanter. It is known that there are three great students of Bishal Salanter. He's probably even within the three the greatest. He was the Talmud in both ways. He was the Talmud in Musar, who wrote the Sefer Kofior, the Rashi of Kambiav, used to call him the Halamdan Shal Musar, because he was also a great Lamdan, as was Rabbitzral. He was the Talmud in Halacha also. And he has a major contribution in both fields. So his Sefer on Musar Kol Peor, and his Sefer on Halacha and Chuvis is Chuvis Pri Yitzchak. Rav Shach always says is a knockout Chuvis. He proves it. He makes a very compelling case. So he has a Chuva where he says something similar. And see, despite our best efforts, we are going to run out of time. So I'll have to expand a little bit on this tomorrow. But just recap the moment, and we'll add just a few more words. We are going to move on to more topics, but he basically has a similar approach, and he compares it to Bris Mila, which may also be an interesting mitzvah to compare it to, that we know that you have to give a baby a bris on a baby boy if everything's in place and it's healthy and there's no other contraindications. So the mitzvah is davka on the eighth day. But we know that the baby doesn't get the bris on the eighth day, the mitzvah applies afterwards also. But yet, we know that the eighth day is very significant, Doche Shabbos, Doche Yom Kippur, and that if one would choose not to do it on the eighth day and say, I'll wait till a more convenient time, he'd be considered very much in bittul of that mitzvah, even though he can still do it later. So he's mevatel the mitzvah by not doing it on the eighth day, even though he still will be required to do it later. And he suggests that Tashbisu has a similar structure, that the mitzvah is Erev Pesach, really, and that's when it is, like the eighth day for the bris. But if you didn't do it then, and there's still chamek left, so then you're going to have a mitzvah to do it afterwards. But it's not the same din anymore. And the mitzvah itself is really on Erev Pesach, just like the bris is on the eighth day. And still, you'll have to do it later if you didn't do it then, just like you'll have to do the bris if you didn't do it on that point. And he also explains, based on that position, that the Gemara says that if somebody holds on to chametz on Pesach, but he does so because he's planning on destroying it, so he's just scheduling how to destroy it, and he sets it aside in order to do it, so that's not by Yirah Ba'yimatze, because he will fix it through destroying it, he's just planning on how to do that. So Hamishah El Manas Levaro, if somebody delays the chametz in his presence with the intention of destroying it, it's not by Yirah Ba'yimatze. So he says that's an unusual kind of lav hanita klase, right? Because lav hanita klase, that's a way of fixing the mess. But no one would ever say that you can create the mess in order to fix it. It's mutter to do because there is a remedy. By its very nature, lav hanita klase is still a lav. Now, you're not allowed to do it in the first place. But if you do it, then you don't have to get malchus because there's a different remedy. So it's not a heter, it's an exclusion from malchus. So here to say that you're allowed to keep the chametz in your house because your intent is to destroy it. So am I allowed to steal because my intent is to return it? I'm not allowed to do the lav because there's a remedy. So this seems to be a strange exception. Why am I allowed to do this? Because I plan on invoking the remedy. So he explains that it's a similar idea, that in that case, the Avera itself is only a problem in that it contradicts the mentality of Tashbisa. But if it's all part of a plan to destroy it, so then it doesn't contradict Tashbisa. So it is a unique kind of structure in that sense, that because of that intent, it isn't allowed in the first place. As opposed to a normal lav hanita klase, where it would only be a cleanup job, but there still would be an aver in the first place. So there's still one major point I want to make about this. I'm sorry that this is slipping along, but I hope they're all still with me on this. And I do hope to segue into something else we have to say, at least one more major point about this. But essentially, just to try to recap, because we spoke about some complicated things. So we discussed Rav Asher's reframing of the question, that everyone should agree that Tashbisu is not about just being without chametz. But the question is, even though it's for everyone should mean to do something, but is it about that action, like Davka Treifa, like Rav Yehuda, or is it about just bringing about the result of not having chametz? And he explained that that's really what the Ramban means when he says that at the time of the Isser Chametz, it's about not having Chametz, but not passively never having Chametz, but it's about being finished with your job of destroying the Chametz by then. And that's related to Machlokes, Magen Avram, and the Kiva Eger about whether there is a role for an Akum in destroying your Chametz without Shlichus and the like. And then we talked about that very unusual suggestion that you could be mekayim tashbisu through eating chametz on Pesach. How could that be? And the whole discussion that the Adaras has in the Sefer Cheshbon HaShal Mitzvah about how it's theoretically a possibility, but not practically, and then ending off it's not practically because there isn't a mitzvah of Teshbisu on Pesach itself. It's Erev Pesach. And then we explored that point that the Rambam saying that it's not Nitar Klas A, why isn't it Nitar Klas A? So Shlomo Fisher explained that they're not at the same time, that the mitzvah is all Erev Pesach, and on Pesach you have Bayir Abayim Matzeh, and Erev Pesach you have Teshbisu. They're not at the same time, so it can't be there to fix Bayir Abayim Matzeh. And you have to say like that because according to the Rambam, Teshbisu is Bittul, and Bittul can't be done after the time of the year, so it's only on Erev Pesach. So the question is, what about Rashi? Rashi also holds that it's Bittul, and yet he holds it is Nitak Laseh. So how could it be both? The mitzvah is Erev Pesach, but it's there to clean up on Pesach too. So he explains that the nature of the mitzvah of Tashbisu is to declare on Erev Pesach that you are disassociating with the Chametz in anticipation of Pesach. So on Pesach itself, you can't contradict that. But the mitzvah is Erev Pesach, but it has an impact throughout Pesach in that you can't do anything to undermine your Erev Pesach mitzvah. So from that perspective, it's relevant all of Pesach. And that's also how you could explain how it could split into two forms. That on Erev Pesach, Rabbi Yehuda holds, it has to be Davkis Reifa. And after, there's Zman Yitzra, according to Rashi, the Tosfos disagrees, but according to Rashi, it takes the form of Hashbasasu B'chol Davar. Because once Pesach starts, it's a different mitzvah, it's a different part of it. It's that all about the different focus, about not contradicting your original Erev Pesach activity. And then we also noted that the Pri Yitzchak writing before him had a similar kind of structure and also compared it to Milah on the eighth day, the mitzvah is the eighth day, but if you don't do it then you have to do it later. So too, when it comes to Tashbisu, the mitzvah is Erev Pesach, but if you don't do it then you have to do it later. And based on that, he explained also why if you delay destroying it on Pesach because it's part of your plan to destroy it, you're not over. When is it mutter to do an Aveira just because there is a say to clean it up? It's a different type of Aveira. Here the Aveira is that you're undermining your Tashbisu, but if it's all part of a plan to destroy it, that's not going to be a undermining of the Tashbisu. Okay, everybody with me? Make sense? Okay. So yeah, that was quite a ride. So we have a little more to add, and look forward to doing that tomorrow, and then segueing into other related topics. Okay, so I wish you all a wonderful day. I'll see you at 9 o'clock tomorrow. It should be only good things.